like a lion, man, I hot, 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 zipper. Tell them I'm me like a lion, I'm free like a lion, man, moving up the authority. Tell them man, I hot, 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 zipper. Like a lion, man, I hot, 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 zipper. Hey, introduce one time, call the beat, I'm set the sire. Everybody know the city, mad is getting wire. Style of figure run like Aya. Inspired from my people, missing up from rich idea. So as a youth, me send me better till the side. Tomorrow I go better, that's the words of your father. So plant a good seed and see how we go prayers for some people. No feed them brain, black up like a Babylon border. Worldwide life is getting harder. See me can't depress my bonfire and it hot like lava. Prepare myself for any flow, any rhythm, any style. Make me tell you this, me tell you anything. Even the fucking player haters grab the shit. Take me hear them create so sweet in the ears. Me a sing, me no knock me mouth. Me say raps I don't play, better me live without them man betray. I'm me like a lion, I'm free like a lion. I'm moving up the authority. Tell them man a hot, 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 zipper. Like a lion man a hot, 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 zipper. Tell them I'm me like a lion, I'm free like a lion. I'm moving up the authority. Man a hot, 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 zipper. Like a lion, man a hot, 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 zipper. Hey, inspired in the place, in the car and dance
floor. Hosted by your girl, me, Keri Hilson, and DJ Epps.
You're rocking with the most downloaded mixtape series in the world. World. Coast to coast mixtapes.
Hey, yo, check this out, Charles. It's your boy, Diddy. It's your boy, Jay-Z on the beat.
Hey, it's your girl, Miss Keri, baby.
Yeah, this the big boss, Ricky Ralph.
Hey, what's up? This is 50 Cent, you're now doing this.
Lil Fat
with DJ F.
Shout out to Lil Fat, you know what it is. Hey yo,
DJ F, coast to coast,
right here, Shadyville DJ.
That's right, and he's singing it to the streets. The world famous. Who's the DJ?
DJ F.
Lil Fat, let's go.
DJ F, what's happening, baby?
As we proceed to give you what you need,
Shadyville DJ, that's right.
Man, I'm listening to my man DJ F.
We got big chain, big calls, nice ladies. We're doing it big. Radio. I'm chilling with DJ Epps.
Lil Fat.
DJ Epps.
Shout out to the CEO of Coast to Coast, Lil Fat.
My man DJ Epps. Let these motherfuckers know.
Coast to Coast Mixtape.
Coast to Coast Mixtape.
Coast to Coast Mixtape.
Coast to Coast DJ.
This is your girl, Keri Hilson, and you're tuned in to the Coast to Coast Radio Show with Lil Fat and DJ Epps. Weekdays from 4 to 6 p.m. on Coast to Coast FM.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Yeah.
What else?
DJ Epps. Coast to Coast Mixtape DJ.
What's up, y'all? It's your girl, Keri Hilson. Check out my new single, Pretty Girl Rock.
That's right. It's the Chief of the Shadyville DJ F. With my girl, Keri Hilson, number 147. Let's get right to it. Follow me.
KLN listeners, it is the 31st day of January 2011. You are listening to CKLN's Rude Awakening is your host BK, a.k.a. BJ, here on Mondays and Thursdays, and it is CKLN 88.1 FM, CKLN.FM online, and Rogers Cable Box 947. And today on the show, I apologize. I did spend a fair amount of time chopping together a bunch of clips last night, and I had a whole show. I had some Webster Tarpley, had some Alan Watt, had some Bob Marley, had some Tupac, had some news on Google and surveillance and all of that. But for whatever reason, I cannot get the computer playing my clips right now. So I should have got more than 3 hours of sleep, but that's okay. That is okay. Here on today's show, on Rude Awakening, definitely wanted to and still want to and still will talk about the unfolding situation in Egypt and what's going on in Egypt right now. My first experience with this was totally accidental. Friday night, I'm watching CBC's The National, and it's 10 o'clock, and I'm hearing about these protests in Egypt, and at first I didn't know exactly what to think, but in the one-hour broadcast of The National from 10 to 11 p.m., probably their most popular hour, the show is rebroadcast pretty much till 1 o'clock in the morning from 9 p.m., they had 45 minutes on the unfolding crisis and protests and riots in Egypt. And the way they were talking about it, the way the CBC national news hosts and commentators and anchors were talking about it, was just glowing, was just celebrating these people's, you know, a valiant, defiant protest against a corrupt government, and them taking into the streets and taking on the army. And I was like, uh-oh, this looks like a giant Anglo-American intelligence operation. And that's right, and I feel bad. I feel sorry for people out there that are sucked into this, just like, you know, every other example where the media sucked us into cheering for something that may not have been, you know, what you know, it really was. May not have been, you know, the road to the promised land and freedom that it was promised to be by the mass media. And so I do feel sorry for that, but I did, look into more evidence on this and reconfirm it. In a nutshell, this was jumped off by Webster Griffin Tarpley. You can see his work at tarpley.net, tarpley.net, where he exposes WikiLeaks as being an Anglo-American, British intelligence, American intelligence front, and also used by other intelligence agencies, because the model of WikiLeaks is that anybody can contribute to it. And so different intelligence agencies release different information at different times to target their various enemies on behalf of the New World Order and whichever oligarchical elements and financiers they work for. The people behind globalization pushing for a world government, essentially several different globalist mafia families agreeing on a plan to capture the entire world, and we are in the latter stages of that plan right now. So I'm watching CBC's The National, I'm watching how these people are talking about it, I'm watching it take up 45 minutes of the one-hour broadcast, and then special note to the CBC, I did also at the end of the show for their local Toronto broadcast see them mention a clip of what's happening here at CKLN Radio, including a short video interview with the head of the Canadian National Independent Radio Association, or College Radio Association, excuse me, mentioned saying that it was a terrible thing that CKLN has essentially had our license revoked by the CRTC, and that she's optimistic and hopeful, like the rest of us are, that we can convince them to change their minds based on the fact that, well, we're doing much better now than when we were under old management, who nobody here at the radio station wanted, none of our fans wanted, and who did a horrible job. And we recently raised $55,000 from the community here in mostly Toronto, in the greater Toronto area, you know, which shows us that obviously there is a market for our community radio and the work that we provide, the broadcasting, the content, the energy, and the independence that we provide as a community radio station here in Toronto. So definitely, shout out to all the people out there who are keeping tabs on this situation. Shout out to BlogTO for interviewing me on Friday, and in a little article about what's happening here at CKLN right after they heard, gave me a call, and I dropped a little bit of my knowledge on the situation for them. But yeah, so no disrespect to the CRTC. There were issues with the station earlier, and we certainly have enemies who have very little support outside of their own camp who do attack the station. And so we hope to get them to stop pestering the CRTC. We have to show them that we are, in fact, wanted by the people of Toronto and doing a good job for the people of Toronto and, of course, for listeners worldwide. So that's a programming note. Just do keep an eye on the situation. Check out CKLN.fm for more on that. I believe that you can contact the CRTC to express how much you enjoy CKLN Radio being on air and how much you want to keep us on air. So certainly I think about doing that on behalf of everyone here at CKLN and, of course, on behalf of yourselves and other fans out there of CKLN Radio. So there is that programming note. But back to the protests in Egypt. I'd like to check out a couple of articles here on what's happening there in Egypt, including one from Paul Joseph Watson at PrisonPlanet.com, who basically exposes, along with Webster Tarpley, that Mohammed El Baradei, the leader in waiting as a result of these protests, is in fact a globalist asset. He is an asset of the New World Order, the former head of the International Atomic Energy Association, who's obviously given one of those international oversight positions by the New World Order because he was loyal to their ends. And I saw an interview with Mr. El Baradei, Dr. El Baradei, as they called him, on CBS's Face the Nation yesterday, talking about this. And it's amazing how he sold it, how former Assistant Secretary of State James Rubin for the U.S. Sold it on CBS News yesterday in the clips I was catching on YouTube to kind of get an idea of the mainstream media spin on this from a few more angles. And they make it seem like it's inevitable. Like, oh, well, you know, you have this corrupt dictator, Hosni Mubarak, for 30 years, and all of a sudden people go nuts against him in revolt. It's inevitable. This sort of thing happens. And yet, if we settle on that, because it's simple and it's easy for us to digest, and it's a preferred simple explanation, then we won't look for anything else. That'll be good enough. Well, what do you mean? He was being repressed by this dictator who managed to stay in power for 30 years, and all of a sudden, a week later, thanks to Twitter, there's a million people in the streets. Well, it's not quite that simple. If Hosni Mubarak is a dictator for 30 years, if he was in the position to be grooming his son Gamal Mubarak for the position of the next dictator of Egypt, then obviously he had a substantial amount of control over the country, probably far too much to allow a rebellion like this to take place without Western support, without some outside support, some outside funding, and certainly some coordination that could beat his not inconsiderable military, police, and intelligence forces that allowed him to maintain power. And so this is reminiscent of the color revolution that the CIA has been fomenting for the last few years, the orange revolution in Ukraine, the pink revolution in Georgia, which put in Saakashvili, who then attacked Russia. And then the Western media blamed Russia for attacking Georgia. So essentially what the CIA has done is CIA, a bunch of spooks, they'll get between usually $10 and $50 million, and they'll go into a country, they'll infiltrate a country, and they'll throw massive, well-funded parties. And many of these parties, especially in Europe, maybe less so in the Muslim world, but in Europe, they involve lots of booze, lots of drugs, and lots of sort of general cheerleading for anarchy and anarchy in the streets and possibly even violence. And then somehow the goal of reasonable political ends to be realized through that process. And I got to tell you something, folks, here in the 21st century, if adults, if grown-ups think that running into the streets and yelling and fighting with cops and military is the best way to achieve political change, we are screwed. We are completely screwed. And I know how tough this is. And I know that based on the extended coverage on the CBC and on other news outlets over the past weekend, that we are being trained how to riot. We're being conditioned. You know, what you have is you have two levels here. You have, on a conscious level, we take in apparently the mass media trying to tell people how to fight for their rights and freedoms, you know, which they never do, and they don't seem to have much of an interest in. So when they sell us this hard, you got to wonder why. And then on a subconscious level, and so we cheer for them, and we cheer for the people over in Egypt, and we wish them luck, and we you know, we're kind of jealous of their ability to fight back, and we're you know, if you're on the left, maybe you're shading a bit more towards being proud of them and feeling the need to support them vicariously here, in the way that we generally like to, like we like to send out good vibes into the air. You know, we like to send out, like, I'm supporting these people by saying the right things here and trying to convince people here to support them. And then if you're on the right, then you might be like, uh-oh, you know, this could be a sign that, you know, radical Islam is taking over and could pose a bigger threat to the West. And so the traditional left-right political divides are there. But most importantly, on the conscious level, we like the media, because the media is showing us protests, and they're cheering for protesters, and so we're like, ah, yay, they're doing a good job, and they're actually showing these people fighting for their freedom. But on a subconscious level, we are being trained how to riot. We're being taught to riot. And in this part of the world here in 2011, before 2012, I do expect to see recession riots, similar to the ones that we've seen throughout Europe and throughout other parts of the world over rising prices, austerity measures, and more. So that is what I see as the mass media psychological operation taking place right now. But before I go any further, I'd like to give out the radio show number here. It is 416-595-1655. Again, 416-595-1655 to share your thoughts this morning here on CKLM Radio on Rude Awakening on a Monday, a cold, blustery Monday here in Toronto, Canada, broadcasting from Ryerson University. And I'm going to take you to one of the reasons why we've got to think a little bit more before we decide to go protesting. Now, in the interest of full disclosure, for those of you out there who are new to the show, for those of you out there who have been listening for a few months, you may be familiar with this narrative, but I went kind of nuts before the G20, along with a couple of my Toronto Truth Seekers colleagues, and mostly by myself, trying to protest against the protest, trying to suggest starting in April, before the G20 martial law summit that took place here in Toronto, I put out flyers and posters with a picture of what happened in Pittsburgh last year, saying Pittsburgh welcomes the world, and then a bunch of heavily armed troops on the streets of Pittsburgh on this little flyer, and it said, "What will people in Toronto do before the G20? June 26th and 27th, because I saw it was going to be problems. I knew they were inviting 10,000 or 20,000 cops, troops, mercs, and spooks, you know, giving all these people diplomatic immunity coming from overseas, and generally going to lock down the city, as they said they were, because of how dangerous these supposed protests were. So I was like, well, instead of just going there and yelling at people who don't care, like the cops, about people who aren't there, like the politicians and crooked business leaders, and then getting beaten up and going home, and then thinking that'll somehow accomplish something, why not share a bit more information in the InfoWar? Why not, you know, give people a bit more knowledge of the system? Why not give people where you live in the city where all this is taking place an idea of what's happening and what your opinions are? So, you know, random snapshots of violence from the protest can't be used to demonize the protesters, the protesting, and the cause. And I even wrote a song called F a Protest, which is F a Protest, F you gonna do before this. And talking about, you know, how this has basically been a failed model since the 1960s, where apparently it looks to me like the oligarchs and their think tanks and psychological psyop divisions and intelligence agents are stopping the mob at the castle walls. So instead of taking the castle, and instead of just, you know, going in there and ousting or beheading corrupt leaders, we kind of stand at the walls, we yell for a couple hours, we hear some speeches, and then we go home. And that's supposed to affect political change, as opposed to what they've done for hundreds of years, which is pass on information to your neighbors about the corrupt system you're in, and then work together to get everyone on the same page so you could figure out what to do about it. You know, should you bug certain politicians? Are they more open to change than others? Should you go after certain issues that resonate with more people? What's pissing people off? You know, what would make people happy to get? You know, does it have to get violent? You know, what's the state, you know, up to when it comes to this? And on and on and on. And one of the dangers of what's happening in Egypt right now with respect to the protests is an article from Paul Joseph Watson. Mohammed El-Baradei, globalist Pied Piper of the Egyptian Revolt. And that is, before you go protesting, you got to figure out what you want. Because otherwise, the New World Order and their Freemasonic coda is Ordo Ab Chao, or Order Out of Chaos. They want to create order out of chaos. So they could get a bunch of people in the streets, wherever. They could do it here in Toronto. They could do it in America. They could do it around the world. And they get a bunch of people in the streets who are just plain pissed off. They're just pissed off. And so they're pissed off, and they're looking for hope, and they're looking for change, and then they could put their own guy in there, you know, because you know, at the end of all that chaos, we're going to want some order, because even we don't like perpetual chaos. And so they'll put their own guy in there. Reminds me very much of the Obama campaign, where they got a bunch of people in the streets mindlessly chanting for hope and change, hope and change. And in our politically correct culture, where we don't want to disagree with each other, you know, we tend to stick to propaganda. That's the problem with this. You know, you can't talk about things. Okay, so what do we have to talk about? Well, if we can't disagree. We live in a conflict-free culture, being socially and politically emasculated when it comes to conversations and when it comes to the dialectic process that can lead to a new thought. A new thought. You know, if you and a buddy argue about something and talk about something and you wrestle with each other a bit, you can come up with an evolution of the thinking you both had. Maybe a new thought you can both agree on, or new insights into each other's side that can nuance your opinions. But if you can't argue with each other about what's going on in a serious, rigid, intellectual, and interesting way, then you got to stick with the propaganda. And so that's what ends up happening. So back to the article by Paul Joseph Watson here. He says, this is from the 29th of January at Infowars.com. The revolt in Egypt is an organically driven people power movement to oust a dictator, restore universal freedoms, and wrestle the country free from the clutches of the U.S. military-industrial complex. But the man now being positioned to form a new government is a Pied Piper working for the very same globalists and NGOs that autocrat leader Hosni Mubarak has dutifully served for nearly 30 years. Make no mistake about it. Under the current regime, Egypt is a vassal state for the New World Order. Under Mubarak, the country receives some $2 billion in aid every year from the United States, second only to Israel. In addition, Egypt pays out $1.1 million annually to the Podesta Group, an organization closely tied with the Obama administration, to act as foreign agents for Mubarak's regime. Mubarak's loyalty to the U.S. empire was reciprocated this week when Vice President Joe Biden ludicrously asserted that Mubarak's unbroken 30-year reign did not represent a dictatorship, and that he was a close ally of the West. Quote, Egypt under Mubarak uses its billions in U.S. military aid to detain, beat, and torture dissenters, opposition politicians, and journalists. Many have died in custody, writes Mark Zepezauer. Quote, thousands of political prisoners and pro-democracy activists are held in overcrowded, disease-ridden prisons without charges or trials. Press restrictions, including newspaper shutdowns, are widespread. And I'd like to divert from the article for just a second here, because one of the talking points out in the media, and again, propaganda works through repetition, is that Mubarak's a bad guy and he was a U.S. ally. And so the U.S. has to be unhappy with what's happening in the streets. And that's a talking point. You'll see it repeated on the media by a variety of sources. Well, let me explain something, essay. Saddam Hussein was a U.S. ally, supported with billions of dollars in U.S. aid and weapons. And the U.S. invaded Iraq twice, once in 91 and once in 2003. And I got to tell you, they've done this to other puppets they've had. In fact, the whole 20th century has been leaders who were allies with the Anglo-American establishment, the forces behind New World Order, the central banking families that print money from nothing to basically buy control over the world, and then use their intelligence agencies, their think tanks, and their secret societies to help manage their control over the world as part of shadow governments worldwide operating behind the scenes of governments. That's why our politicians are elected, and they never do what we want, because there is a shadow government infrastructure out there that is pushing for policies and pushing for a global standardization of policy, of economy, of culture, and of thought to create the new world order, one world government that the people at the top seek. So essentially, what you'll see is you'll see many members of the left and many members of the mainstream media will cite the fact that Mubarak was a dictator and he was so horrible and the people should revolt against that. And absolutely, but figuring out how they did it is going to be important. And how they could. Was it just Twitter? Was it just Facebook? Was it just social networking? Are we so wedded to the idea that social networking is so damn powerful that it can, this can be done anywhere, and that this can be done against a dictatorship, which is obviously stable in Egypt as a stable country in the Middle East? And what is this setting up? Well, first of all, another note to make on this is that the people behind this include the Muslim Brotherhood. And the Muslim Brotherhood were set up in the 1920s as an arm of British intelligence before the U.S. had an intelligence agency with the OSS towards the end of World War II, and then that evolved into the CIA. But in the 1920s, the Muslim Brotherhood was set up, and as Dr. John Coleman has said, as I find the quote from Dr. John Coleman here, the Muslim Brotherhood was basically set up, here we go, Dr. John Coleman, a former British intelligence agent who wrote the book The Committee of 300, states in his report on Iran's Islamic Revolution that the Muslim Brotherhood was created by, quote, the great names of British Middle East intelligence, unquote, and that their mission was to, quote, keep the Middle East backward so that its natural resource, oil, could continue to be looted. And that was the plan, and Webster Griffin Tarpley's talked about this. The Epoch Times has an article on the CIA links to the Muslim Brotherhood alleged. You can see more of these links on my blog at blackkrishna.blogspot.com. Britain and the Muslim Brotherhood collaboration during the 1940s and 50s, a book by Mark Curtis, and on. I've done a lot of the research, and then I even flipped it to the mainstream news articles, which are talking about this as well, including the Associated Foreign Press, Israeli analysts fear Islamic takeover in Egypt, quote, in this kind of chaotic situation, the advantage of groups like the Muslim Brotherhood is that they are the most organized and also the most resolute, said Benjamin Miller, a Haifa University expert on Middle East conflicts and security. And the Muslim Brotherhood is in fact tied to Freemasonry, another British intelligence asset, sort of the global worldwide Queen's Intelligence Agency, Queen of England, since she's the worldwide head of Freemasonry, a secret society whose networks stretch worldwide to help manage international affairs. And so the Muslim Brotherhood is their Islamic arm. And what their job is to do is their job is to keep the Arab world backwards. Their job is to put forward the most radical elements in Islamic cultures to make them a perpetual threat to the West, and to keep them backward, to stifle progress, to engage in human rights abuses and so on, all at the behest of the Anglo-American establishment. And so that has been the history of the 20th century. Now, there are factions in this giant set of social conditions, you know, worldwide, that rebel against this. But by and large, due to the connections with the moneyed elite of the world, the financiers and central banksters, these are the dominant elements in our culture that drive much of domestic and foreign policy. So it's important to understand that. And it's important to understand that the Muslim Brotherhood is in fact one of the groups behind the El Baradei, Dr. Mohammed El Baradei takeover of Egypt from Hosni Mubarak. An even more pliant Western puppet is about to be put in power in Egypt, mostly because the people there, and through not entirely through any fault of their own, but the people there who may not have been aware of their options to fight the info war, decided to go protesting instead. And I got to tell you, once this idea gets into people's heads, it is really, really hard to shake. I remember last year during the G20 summit, before the G20 summit, people would ask me, hey man, you going to the protests? You're against the New World Order? You want to fight this stuff? And I'm like, what is the point of that? What do you think will be accomplished? And they're like, oh, I don't know. And I'm like, so why would people go? Why should people go? I mean, wouldn't it be better if we just didn't show up and we made the $1.5 billion in security wasted by our government look like a joke, even more of a joke than it looked after the protests when our cops, troops, mercs, and spooks were ordered to stand down so some protest terrorist tourists who were likely agents provocateurs were allowed to burn and break things all over the city. Would it be great if we all just didn't show up and said, screw your damn protests, we're going to let these people know who you are. You know, we're a bunch of adults. We're not going to show up to a fight with the cops when our government invites us to. We know our government's corrupt. The only reason our government would invite us to a fight with the cops is if they thought we were going to lose. And for years, for decades now, governments have built up these massive domestic armies. They've militarized the police. You can see the police here in Toronto running population control exercises, many of them at the G20 martial law and at the Carabana martial law just a few weeks later, are wearing uniforms with red, green, and blue blinking lights on their backs. You know, very, very robotized in their fashion. But again, we saw a lot of this in movies, in video games. There's been a ton of predictive programming, so we're all fairly used to it. But the point is, they built up these massive domestic armies specifically to fight with protesters, specifically to put down domestic riots. And so when we're being trained to riot by our mass media right now, it's important to understand this and to get to the bottom of this and to understand what our options are. Postering, flyering, copying DVDs and sharing them, passing on web links. I'm trying to cut through conversations. Our current social engineering model is, you know, 5 years ago, you know, pretty much anybody could talk about 9/11 for 5 minutes. Anywhere, at a party, social circle, maybe not at work, maybe not places where, you know, there were probably certain areas where you couldn't. But in most casual social settings, you could talk about, you know, the 9/11 attacks and questions you had or crazy theories for 5 minutes. Now, with our social conditioning and the use of social approval and social disapproval for what we say, you know, as soon as you start into that area or other parallel anti-New World Order areas or serious political topics that reveal a conspiracy that may make people feel uneasy, we will actually cut each other off on behalf of other people. So it's not even so much that the individual themselves, who is a strong-willed personality enough to cut you off, is necessarily threatened by this as much as they are concerned that other people are. It's being nice. It's being polite. It's saving other people from having to hear this or having to talk about this. And so that's, you know, one element. Is the Egyptian government using agents provocateurs to justify a crackdown on protesters? From Washington's blog, courtesy of Infowars.com, an Al Jazeera reporter, Ayman Moyeldin, reports that eyewitnesses have said that, quote, party thugs associated with the Egyptian regime's central security services in plain clothes with bearing government Israeli-issued weapons, have been looting in Cairo. Ayman says the reports started off as isolated accounts but are now growing in number. Again, you can check out my website, blackchristian.blogspot.com, for links to more of these articles. But the point is, this is a model. They have agent provocateurs set up to fight with people and to take masses of people, demonize them to fellow police officers, and then have those cops wade in and beat the hell out of us. It's a joke. And yet I know that when I was postering and flyering during the G20 martial law, before, during, and after it, there were no agent provocateurs out there putting up, you know, hastily photoshopped and doctored versions of my posters to demonize me. You know, there were no agent provocateurs out there, you know, doing things and trying to blame them on me. There was just, you know, occasionally I'd get eyed by the cops, and occasionally I'd get ID'd by the cops. And that was only during the G20 martial law. Outside of that, they really, you know, they don't bother with you. And so it's a much better and safer and more effective way of informing people where you live, so when things get tough, we don't just go mindlessly rioting. We don't just take to the streets and get angry and yell and scream like lunatics. And another reason is that most people who go to these protests, this is like the big rock concert model. This is the big blow-off steam model. The people that go to these usually don't do anything else about the issues. They just go to the protest. They want to be there. They want to be in a big crowd. They want to act all crazy, and they want to go home. They don't get informed. They don't inform other people. They don't calmly and consistently share information to push for better policies. This is the way the New World Order has trained us to act like zombies, protest zombies. Ironically, the Toronto Zombie Walk had like 5 or 10,000 people this year. So we want to act like zombies. And this is a way to act like zombies. Or act like we're going to a rock concert. You know, not to think, but to feel. And this is not going to serve us well in this model. Now, we're currently being inspired by what's going on in Egypt, but they don't want us too inspired, our corporate state media, because if they did, then they would show us a bunch of white protesters in Europe, including the French, who, you know, usually calmly and peacefully take to the streets, and their cops and military calmly and peacefully let them. It's an arrangement they have there to maintain the standards of living in France. Because the cops and military there realize that if they don't let these people do this, then their standards of living could go down. And because there's a history in France of doing this. There's a history in France of fighting for 4 to 6 weeks vacation, fighting for 37-hour work weeks, you know, fighting for a high standard of living, fighting to keep genetically modified foods out, and fighting to say, we're French, piss off. You know, we don't care what, you know, the Western corporate media is saying is cool. You know, we kicked Euro Disney out a few years. Wait, you kick Euro Disney out. We made Euro Disney a failure in Paris a few years ago, and we are determined to keep and preserve our culture and our freedoms and our opportunities and our standards of living. And so they have that going for them as a fairly strong nationalist country. And you don't see our media putting that on TV much. They'll show us, you know, a bunch of Muslims protesting because it'll plant the idea of protest into our heads. But after years of demonization, you know, most Canadians really can't relate to them quite as well as they normally would if they hadn't been demonized in our media so much. So that's what you see happening on TV right now. And this is from McClatchy Newspapers here, courtesy of Infowars.com. Why has Egypt's army not confronted the protests? Washington, as unprecedented protests have led to national chaos in Egypt, the Egyptian army has taken no decisive action to end the conflict, leaving experts to wonder which of four possibilities are governing the military's actions. Does the military sympathize with the protesters? Is it waiting for the right moment to intervene? Is it divided internally? Does it see itself as not the protector of Hosni Mubarak's regime, but of the Egyptian state? And so, I'm seeing articles like this from a few different sources, including the Washington Post, mainstream intelligence network CIA Operation Mockingbird Bilderberg Group paper, talking about this. Why is the army not, you know, beating on the protesters? Well, the truth is, from other reports, well, in many cases they are, in other cases they aren't. You know, they're trying to figure out what's going on, just like everybody in this system when ish hits the fan, just like people did, you know, last summer here in Toronto when it was G20 martial law, and the cops didn't know what was going on, and the people didn't know what was going on, and the people at the top were watching everything to see how that test operation was running, and to see, you know, how they could perfect the process of getting us rioting and getting us to get the crap kicked out of us down the line as they further collapse the economy. And so we're being sold this as a good thing by corrupt Western media outlets. And if we go along with this again, just like the Obama hope and change thing, just like, you know, all the other corporate media superstars, just like Sarah Palin for the right, you know, or Mitt Romney or whoever the hell they pull out for the right next, just like cheering for Jack Layton for 10 or 15 years now, and him not really accomplishing much, him not really going for the jugular when it comes to exposing the power structure that is behind so much of the corruption that affects so many of the people he purports to represent, or choosing between Michael Ignatieff, a carpetbagging piece of crap, or Stephen Harper, a fascist. You know, if we decide to cheer for anything, anybody sold by our mass media, we have to realize it will result in a disappointment down the line by design. And every time we go through this, it breaks our will. And going forward, unless what happens in Egypt is all sunshine and roses, and it's a fount of democracy and freedom and prosperity, then we'll be depressed by the outcome of these anyway. And when it comes to the protests and the protesters, it seems like many of them did not think about what was going to happen after this, based on what I can see and based on what the reports are that we can tell. But nonetheless, Ottawa moves to evacuate Canadians in Egypt. From various news sources here in Canada, Ottawa is sending chartered flights to evacuate its citizens there. About 5,500 Canadians are in Egypt, and so on. Now, from henrymacko.com, Egypt is another Soros, quote, color revolution. I'll let Dr. Henry M-A-K-O-W shed a little bit more light on this. The turmoil in Egypt is another contrived Illuminati-backed, quote, color revolution designed to install puppets more subservient to their London-based masters. Over the last decade, we've seen such revolutions in Serbia, Georgia, Ukraine, Kyrgyzstan, Mongolia, and recent failed attempts in Burma, Iran, and Thailand. Iran had the, quote, Green Revolution or Twitter Revolution in 2009, fomented by U.S. intelligence and British intelligence that failed, thanks to the work of Iran's leader, Ahmadinejad. Now, keep in mind here, I am not pro-Mubarak, I am not pro-Ahmadinejad, I am not pro-any leader of the world right now. I don't think there's any one of them that I can truly trust. But at the same time, when it comes to these destabilization efforts, we can't let the media, you know, make everything seem like it's normal, it's natural, it's just logical. Because ultimately what happens is, in our societies, with the New Age thinking, and with the positive thinking, you know, we want to look positive on everything. And so you can't challenge anything. And so you've got to accept the propaganda. And 1, 2, 3, they got you hogtied. They get your mind hogtied. And so back to this article here. Human rights and, quote, democracy is always the pretext for these Illuminati gambits, dating back to the French and Russian revolutions. They take advantage of genuine grievances to hoodwink the public. This time there was no color scheme to tip us off, but the unanimous support by Illuminati-controlled mass media was a signal. You wouldn't hear about it otherwise. For example, did you know that real nationalists took over the government of Hungary? No. And whenever there's real nationalist revolts, when there's real nationalist protests in Iceland against the bankers, the British bankers, looting their country and demanding this little nation of 300,000 people pay back billions and billions of dollars in debt accrued when British banksters used their country to launder money and to run fraudulent derivative schemes. You don't hear about these things. You don't hear about these organic revolutions. The confirmation is the man they are touting to replace Hosni Mubarak. Globalist Wajib Mohammed al-Baradei is a trustee of the, quote, International Crisis Group, unquote, a, quote, independent non-profit group run by bankers to incite revolutions and profit from them. His fellow trustee is none other than the ubiquitous Rothschild frontman, George Soros. Al-Baradei, who recently resigned as director of the International Atomic Energy Agency, just in time to take over Egypt after these protests, I will add, is being groomed by the Illuminati to replace Mubarak. He and his agency won the 2005 Nobel Prize. That's right. Every time you hear Al-Baradei talked about in our corporate mass media, they say Nobel Prize winner, Mohammed Al-Baradei, making it seem like he's a good guy because he won a Nobel Prize. Well, the Nobel Prize was given to Obama for escalating the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. It was given to Al Gore for selling us the global warming / climate change carbon taxing derivative Ponzi scheme fraud that's impoverishing countries worldwide and setting up a form of global neo-communism. So you can't always trust the Nobel Prize. Hell, Hitler was Time Magazine's Man of the Year twice. So you can't trust these traditional corporate media institutions or international institutions, for that matter, to sell us the truth. In April, Al-Baradei gave a speech at Harvard saying he was, quote, looking for a job and wanted to be, quote, an agent of change and advocate for democracy, unquote, in Egypt. This is code for a local boss in the NWO banker tyranny. Barack Obama has taught us about change, Dr. Macko writes slyly in brackets. In February, Al-Baradei was part of a new non-party political movement called, quote, the National Association for Change, which included a leader of the banned Masonic Muslim Brotherhood. The Muslim Brotherhood is a proxy for Britain's MI6 masquerading as Muslim fundamentalists. In November, they were roundly defeated in elections, so this revolution seems to be their answer. Mubarak wisely jailed their leaders. On Thursday, Al-Baradei returned to Egypt to lead the demonstrations, and I saw news articles about this in the mainstream media as well. All I had to do was click Google and type in Egypt and then click news, and I could catch some of the latest developments from different perspectives, especially the mainstream media. And so back to the article here. On Thursday, Al-Baradei returned to Egypt to lead the demonstrations. Friday, he and his supporters were subjected to water cannons and batons. Today he announced, quote, "We are seeking a change of regime. President Mubarak should step down. We should head towards a democratic state through a new government and free democratic elections. The whole world should realize that the Egyptians are not going home until their demands are realized. We're talking about taking down the pharaonic dictatorship." And ironically, many of these secret societies, you know, worldwide, look to the pharaohs for their inspiration and as the birthplace of the mystery religions and hidden knowledge that's been passed down through generations. That's why you'll see, and I saw this, did a report on this last summer at the Shriners Parade up University Avenue here in downtown Toronto. And it says on their own buses, all Shriners are Masons, so that should settle that. I went to this parade. It looked like an old family gathering of Shriners from all across America and Canada, of mostly old white guys wearing red fez hats and riding around in little go-karts, and also celebrating Egyptian iconography. They were wearing Egyptian robes. They were riding on fake camels. They were driving around with floats with pyramids on them. So why are a bunch of old white guys who are members of the Shriners who say they're all Masons celebrating so much Egyptian iconography? Just because it looks cool? Why is there a pyramid on the U.S. $1 bill? Why are the protests in Egypt being used to sell the Western world on how cool rioting is, on how the military will stand down, on how you can get free elections, on how you can reject a tyrannical government? You know, why is all of this happening? Why is Egypt the birthplace for this? What's going on right now? You know, we should see. You can go to henrymakow.com for more on that. Just a quick look at Google News right now. Egypt protesters maintain pressure. More countries help citizens flee Egypt. EU urges Egypt to seek peaceful shift into democracy. Ottawa sending chartered flights to evacuate Canadian citizens, and so on and so forth. Also, economic woes will be blamed on this. Stock market will take a hit. Gas prices will go up. Other economic woes, and based on the simplest explanations possible, just because of the size of this event, many of us will choose to believe it. Oh, well, you saw how big those protests were. Of course it affected gas. Not realizing that that gas stockpiles are shipped months in advance. To get a tanker from place X, from say the Middle East to Canada or America, takes months and months and months of moving heavy amounts of oil, and they have stockpiles that are meant to last just in case the shipments are cut off. And we have domestic oil resources. So there's absolutely no reason for prices to go up as a result of this. And yet, if there's an excuse to jack them, they'll use it. Another issue is the clash of civilizations. My buddy did his political science master's thesis in this. This is a thesis Samuel P. Huntington came up with in 1993. He wrote a book called The Clash of Civilizations. And many mainstream political science pundits and politicians and others actually subscribe to this theory. And what Mr. Huntington posited is that in the post-Cold War period, cultural clashes were to take over from the old ideological clashes of left versus right, capitalism versus communism. And so Samuel Huntington predicted all of this. Now, predicted or suggested or diagnosed or introduced? Because the point is, that thesis was widely celebrated, so widely celebrated, it may be how the globalists are trying to manifest World War III. There are articles you can see about how Israel is worried. It says here from the Associated Foreign Press, and again, I read this, Israeli analysts fear the Islamic takeover in Europe. And so what's happening right now? Essentially, Egypt was the West's strongest ally in the Middle East and Israel's strongest ally in the Middle East. And that is that after the Seven Days War in the 1960s, Egypt was the first country to broker a peace deal with Israel. And that helped stabilize conditions for Israel in the Middle East and helped other countries broker peace treaties with Israel, you know, which were shaky, no doubt, but which lasted. And so what's happening right now? Revolution being fomented in Tunisia, in Egypt, a signal to other countries throughout the Arab world to revolt, and get Western media support and get international community support. And what does this mean? Well, this could mean more destabilization there. This could mean that new regimes who are hostile to Israel show up, and it could mean that this is the way they are setting up the ultimate end to the clash of civilizations, which is World War III, starting with the Middle East and extending to the West versus Russia and China, who are similarly being demonized in parallel measures. So what is the solution to all this? The solution to all this is the information war. If people don't know about the New World Order, if they don't know about the Muslim Brotherhood, if they don't know about Muhammad al-Baradei, then they won't be able to figure any of this out. You know, back in the 1960s, during the Vietnam War, I talked to a guy who was there, and he did this. He says, every time some evil lies would come out of the Pentagon and be recycled by the media, they would counteract it by handing out flyers, handing out pamphlets, handing out newsletters, putting up posters, and trying to combat that so that people around them wouldn't get brainwashed and fooled by the latest propaganda. Well, today, we have propaganda coming out as faster than ever. We've got social networking sites like Facebook and Twitter and so on to combat them. But we also have the streets where we can take the fight to the streets and actually make more of an impact on people than little bits and blurbs of zeros and ones as electronic information. You see here, protesters stand their ground as tanks roll into Tahrir Square on the cover of thestar.com, and a ton of celebration by the Toronto Star to galvanize the left-wing media in this country into supporting this without understanding the bigger picture, and that's what's so important. So, anyway, just a quick run through what's going on in Egypt. It is the most important thing right now because it is setting us up, it is conditioning us and training us how to riot instead of calmly and consistently share information so we all get on the same page and pressure our politicians for better policies. And it is possibly setting up World War III by destabilizing the Middle East. And it is ultimately a Western intelligence operation sowed by connections that Western intelligence has had to the Arab world since the 1920s that more people need to know about. So, before the People's DJ takes you on a four-hour jazz experience you will not forget, I would like to shout out some websites where you can learn a bit more about this. You can check out blackkrishna.blogspot.com, where I blog. You can check out whatyouwantabelievein.com for my website, including poster and flyer templates that you can find. You can check out infowars.com for the V for Victory campaign, where people are putting up posters with the letter V on it and a little bit of information reminiscent of the movie V for Vendetta, something that people will resonate with to give people an idea that we do need to fight for our rights, but we do need to do it calmly and consistently in ways that get us to know our neighbors and get us talking with our neighbors, a two-pronged effort. One, the info war to spread awareness, and two, using that awareness and talking with each other through the conversations created by that awareness about how to pressure our politicians for better policies. So Infowars.com for the V for Victory campaign for more on that. You can also check out HenryMAKOW.com for the rest of that article on Muhammad al-Baradei, the globalist Pied Piper who is set to take over Egypt as a result of the protests instead of the Infowar model that they've recently used, fomented by Western intelligence agencies. You can check out CuttingThroughTheMatrix.com for the great work of Canadian Alan Watt. You can check out TheCorbettReport.com for James Corbett, another Canadian who's out in Japan right now, podcasting on a regular basis. Check out Free Domain Radio for Sylvain Molyneux's excellent work as a Canadian philosopher. Check out NaturalNews.com, great natural news. Mercola.com, again. Check out VRAN.org for vaccine exemption form. Very, very important out there. I got to tell you something. If you're a guy and I hand you a tiny little 1x3-inch piece of the paper with where to get vaccine exemption forms on it, and I see you have a kid with you, like a little baby or something, and you don't take that piece of paper, I might hit you. I might just freaking hit. Now, you might hit me back, but ultimately, there's a little baby there. So, you know, I may have to deal with the consequences, and so might you. If you're a woman, then I might be a little polite. Oh, that's okay. Don't worry about it. But if you're a dude, and you got a kid, and you can't look at a little 1x3-inch piece of paper and look into the issue of vaccines and vaccine exemption forms, I might just crank you. And I don't mean to be mean. I mean to be nice. So let's figure out what the hell I mean. Fluoridealert.org. The Calgary City Council just recently voted not to fluoridate Calgary's water. So a huge victory that took place in Calgary just a few days ago. Definitely get hit to that. You can see more at fluoridealert.org. And we can get it out of our water supply here as well, here in Toronto, because it is, in fact, slowing us down and has a whole bunch of health risks associated with it. Locally, you can check out the Toronto G20 Exposed.com for a great film on that. PressForTruth.ca for an upcoming Great film on that, based on their excellent work so far. Conspiracy Culture book and DVD store at Queen and Roncesvalles. The Toronto Street newspaper out there sold by the homeless. It is really cold today, so why not flip a homeless guy you see a toonie for the Toronto Street News? Support the great work of Victor Fletcher and get a homeless guy a cup of coffee and a chance to get warm. TorontoTruthSeekers.com, nearly 500 truth seekers in Toronto active and discussing these issues. And everybody should get ready for the InfoWar this year. It is 2011, before 2012, and the multitude of apocalyptic predictions that are foreshadowed. Let's understand who really runs the world. Let's understand the New World Order. Let's understand how they influence our culture. Let's figure out ways to mitigate that influence, improve our health, our wealth, and our relationships. Let's cut cancer rates in half. Let's cut divorce rates in half. Let's cut crime rates in half. Let's get all the bangers out there hip to this. Let's get all the kids out there hip to this. Let's get everyone hip to this so that we understand who the New World Order is, what they're up to, and how we can stop them, and that is by getting active in the InfoWar. So hopefully you enjoyed today's show. It's been a slice here for Monday, January 31st, 2011, as we head into February. It's cold out there, so take care of yourselves and each other. Peace out.
Rappers, where did it go wrong? I guess them haters figured this would happen all along. Instead of working on music, artists are focused on a controversy, trying to force themselves into a hit song. That shit is played out, most of it's dead wrong. You would have never heard Pac get on a dance song. That's why most of these rappers can't get their pants on. Too busy focused on image to get their rap on. Too busy looking like beavers to get their scrap on. Too busy focused on shit to get their crap on. How about a round of applause? Let's get our clap on. Let's celebrate to the fact that rap is now gone. Let's celebrate to the fact that right's the new wrong. And let us have a moment of silence.
Where
here we go.
Go. Where can I find it? Don't even listen to the radio. It's like nobody tries. That's why nobody buys anymore. It's still in stores. And
I'm so confused. Didn't think it would happen. Didn't think I'd imagine rappers living so established. Did it happen to happen? Cause sadness turns into madness. And madness, the reason all these rappers think that they can have it. A part of being great is knowing that you can manage. Never break out of habit. The vision is in your talent. Never break out of try. Cause if you want it, you